Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 25th day of May, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and it's been an interesting week, a week of really good news, really bad news, and finally some things that may actually be coming to a conclusion, or at least coming to a middle. So let's start off today with the good news, because it's been a long time coming. President Trump on Thursday finally announced that he has directed the U.S. intelligence community to, quote, quickly and fully cooperate with the Attorney General's investigation into surveillance activities during the 2016 presidential election, unquote, adding that his Attorney General, William Barr, has been given, quote, complete authority to declassify information pertaining to the investigation. And he followed that up with a tweet announcing that, quote, today's action will help ensure that all Americans learn the truth about the events that occurred, unquote. And wouldn't that be a welcome change? Especially if you hearken back to the Obama regime being the most transparent administration in human history.
I guess it all depends on what the meaning of the word transparent is.
Earlier in the week, of course, we'd heard teasers from genuine investigative reporters like The Hill's John Solomon, who said that the declassifications would probably include the so-called Bucket Five, documents originally presented to the infamous Gang of Eight back in 2016, which included everything the FBI and DOJ used against the Trump campaign and aide Carter Page, including the FISA Court surveillance application and its underlying exculpatory intelligence, which they withheld from the FISA Court and, obviously, the Congress and the American people. Following up on this latest blockbuster announcement, investigative journalists Paul Sperry and Sarah Carter, appearing on Fox, said that the first phase of information, the Bucket Five stuff, would not only include those FBI documents that tend to exonerate Trump campaign officials George Papadopoulos and Carter Page, but even transcripts of recordings, made surreptitiously, of course. In other circumstances, you'd hear terms like a bug or a wire, where they made it very clear to the so-called investigators that there was no way the Trump campaign was working with Russia. Imagine, folks, if the FBI, CIA, NSA, and other intelligence agencies had just been honest 2 years ago. What's interesting here, says the Gateway Pundit's coverage, are the historic implications that the Trump campaign and transition team were in fact, yes, spied upon by the outgoing Obama regime, which clearly never intended to leave. And as I read that, I couldn't help but hearken back to all the various inaugurations I've watched over many, many years, where inevitably the talking heads pontificate about how wonderful it is that here's another example of a peaceful transition of power, even between administrations in opposing parties. And back when some of them even used to know what form of government we actually had, they'd say this is a tribute to the strength of the constitutional republic. Well, folks, what we have now is a whole different animal, and a deep state that clearly intended to hang on to power by any means necessary, and are still obviously not going down without a fight. Oh, and one more interesting tidbit here. The memorandum from the White House requests the assistance of the following government departments: the Secretary of State, Treasury, Secretary of Defense, Attorney General, which would of course include the FBI, Secretary of Energy, Secretary of Homeland Security, Director of National Intelligence, and Director of the CIA. Now, it's obvious why those last few are in there, but what's not clear, notes the Gateway Pundit, is why the Secretary of Defense, Energy, and Secretary of Homeland Security would be listed. Almost like there's another shoe or three to drop. Related good news from Fox News and Breitbart, where Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida appeared with Sean Hannity on Thursday after all of this came down, explaining why President Donald Trump's actions and his latest executive order giving the Attorney General the authority to compel the intelligence community to cooperate with his investigation. Demonstrated that former FBI Director, the Whoremeister himself, James Comey, former DNI, James Clapper, and of course the traitor and known perjurer, former CIA Director John Brennan, are all in jeopardy. Quote, I think what's most important about this executive order is that it shows Comey, Clapper, and Brennan are all in jeopardy, he said. If this was just a question of misconduct at the FBI, the president wouldn't have given the attorney general such sweeping authority to be able to compel the production of evidence from the intelligence community, from the CIA, from the NSA. And that's where I believe the evidence was withheld from the FISA courts, he continued, where George Papadopoulos was saying we weren't colluding with Russians. That would be illegal. That was withheld. And furthermore, he continued, now that you've mentioned the Gang of Eight, what's so important about that is that they included statements of exculpatory evidence, which would have shown that Carter Page and George Papadopoulos were not a basis to continue this so-called, folks, investigation. And that, he continued, is not going to line up with what was presented to the FISA courts. And this disparate display of the evidence is going to show where the corruption occurred, and they should be very worried. Other nutcase knee-jerk leftists, though, are very worried indeed. One of the worst of the worst, Representative Adam Schiff for Brains of California, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, how's that for a misnomer, attacked President Trump after all of this as being un-American, and I guess he ought to know, accusing the actually elected president and the attorney general of conspiring to, quote, and I'm not kidding, weaponize law enforcement and classified information against their political enemies. Wait a minute, that's their job! Joseph Goebbels would be proud of you, Shifty. And when it comes to being utterly shameless, and of course shiftless, here's the reprobate's entire tweet. Quote, while Trump stonewalls the public from learning the truth about his obstruction of justice, Trump and Barr conspire to weaponize law enforcement and classified information against their political enemies. The cover-up has entered a new and dangerous phase.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
This is un-American. And that last tiny part may have been the only thing this guy has said since he got into office that was even remotely true. What we have been watching for over 2 years now is utterly un-American. And there's more good news, this time from across the pond, where finally Theresa May has announced her resignation, effective June 7. And most of the headlines actually say something like this, Theresa May cries as she announces her upcoming resignation. It's not all good news, of course. Euro deep state forces are still trying to stymie the Brexit deal by calling for a new election. Maybe the home of MI5, MI6, and the infamous Steele dossier can throw a spanner in the works that way, because they seem to have had a far bigger hand in election rigging than Russia ever did. Said Zero Hedge's summary of the widespread coverage, fighting off tears after rattling off her many accomplishments and thanking the people of the UK for the honor of a lifetime, Theresa May said Friday she will resign, finally, and good riddance, said your host, on Friday, June 7, 2 weeks from now, after a rebellion within the Conservative Party forced her to step down. In the process, she will abandon her supremely unpopular withdrawal agreement, which is basically not much of a withdrawal anyway, instead of trying to force it through the Commons for a fourth time. Ultimately, it says, May's decision to call for a fourth vote on the withdrawal agreement, this time trying to package it in a bill that could have opened the door to a second confirmatory referendum, in other words, keep voting until you get the answer you want, was more than her fellow Conservatives, sick, could tolerate. One of her top cabinet ministers resigned, and Graham Brady, the leader of the Tory backbenchers, effectively forced May out by rounding up the votes for a rule change that would have allowed other MPs, members of Parliament, to oust her. By the way, notes Zero Hedge, reaction in the foreign exchange markets was generally muted. After day after day after day of getting hammered, the British pound finally took a breather on the relief news. And as Zero Hedge notes, her decision to step down had been telegraphed well in advance anyway. Writes fellow Brit, the much-banned Paul Joseph Watson, at the end of her speech, the Prime Minister became emotional. Her voice cracked and she was on the edge of tears, prompting an outpouring of sympathy from many establishment voices. However, he continued, others pointed out that May deserves zero sympathy given what she's put the country through. One, Julia Hartley Brewer, put it this way, stop feeling sorry for Theresa May. She didn't deserve the country that she loved, as she claimed. She worked for 3 years to undermine the biggest Democratic vote in our country's history. She served her own interests to stay in office. She has brought our country to its knees. Unquote. Asked whether he felt any sympathy, Watson quotes a former conservative MP, David Meller, who responded, "No, Theresa May should never have been prime minister," adding she left his party in a mess. Paul Joseph Watson himself was even less kind, noting that May deserves nothing but contempt because her entire agenda from the start was simply to sabotage Brexit. And as a former defense secretary, Sir Michael Fallon, noted, having voted and campaigned to remain, May never really believed in Brexit at all. The fact that she's totally failed in an embarrassing fashion, though, means there's still a chance, suggests Watson, that the UK can recover its pride and escape the clutches of the Byzantine authoritarian hellscape that is the European Union. So I guess, folks, when you step back and look at it, the good news from both sides of the pond today is a ray of hope that the truth might actually start to come out and the forces of the global totalitarian deep state might suffer at least a setback. Sadly and even disgustingly, however, there's a whole bunch of really bad news at the end of the week as well. Just as WikiLeaks editor-in-chief evidently anticipated, the Department of, yeah, in this case, still Just Us, has revealed that Julian Assange isn't part of Just Us, and that a grand jury in Virginia, since they can indict a ham sandwich, has also indicted him and returned a new 18-count superseding indictment against Assange, including violations of the Espionage Act, stemming from his role in publishing stuff that the American peons weren't ever supposed to see. Classified documents leaked by Chelsea Manning, as well as his original charge of conspiring to break into a government computer, according to the gray lady, the New York Times. Now that Big Brother is up the ante, Assange faces now a maximum of 10 years in prison for each of the 17 violations of the Espionage Act, plus the 5-year penalty for his earlier and arguably bogus hacking charge. And in addition to significantly raising the punishment threshold from a maximum of 5.5 years under the previous indictment to now the possibility even of a death sentence, the new charges raise serious First Amendment issues, to put it very mildly, as Assange becomes the first journalist charged under the Espionage Act. Whistleblower Edward Snowden, who also knows what it's like to have a price on your head for trying to get the truth out to the American people, reacted on Twitter saying the Department of Justice has just declared war, not on WikiLeaks, but on journalism itself. This, he said, is no longer about Julian Assange. This case will decide the future of media. Unquote. And one thing is for darn sure, it's very definitely intended to send a quite chilling message to any real remaining investigative journalist out there. Your next story, if the deep state doesn't want people to know it, may well be your last. And there's no shortage of downright bitter irony wrapped up in this particularly bad piece of news, folks. Ponder the contradictions here. If, for example, Julian Assange had sold critically important national security information to, say, malevolent foreign powers, he not only would probably still be free today, he could probably even run for president as a Democrat. So given that Americans are now, hopefully, finally going to be able to see evidence that's been hidden from them, and worse, for at least 2 years, maybe it's time to recap some of the news from earlier in the week leading up to the momentous events from Thursday into Friday. And where else to start but here? From the downright evil and proud of it files, or maybe you could say hubris knows no bounds, and Christina Lela at the Gateway Pundit, the only so-called attorney general ever to be held in contempt of Congress for actual cause, self-described as Obama's wingman. Yeah, Mr. Fast and Furious Eric Holder himself is in the news with a new contender for biggest whopper of the year. And you do have to love this, in a disgusting kind of way. Said Eric Holder, describing the new attorney general, who actually intends to bring criminals like him to justice, quote, "He is not fit to lead the DOJ. What, because he hasn't sold guns to Mexican drug lords? Executed a church full of kids? Or even stonewalled a few criminal investigations?" Here's the entire whopper from the man who should be wearing an orange jumpsuit. Quote, "AG Barr has deliberately misrepresented the Mueller report. He has started examinations of the conduct of Intel/FBI personnel without a predicate for political reasons. He is protecting the president. He does not stand up for the good people he leads. He is not fit to lead the DOJ.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it."
Admittedly, folks, a self-serving, shameless whopper like that one probably deserves the whole song and a chorus of boos besides. About all I can really add is that even words like shameless hubris don't do this guy justice. Come to think of it, I guess about all that would be an extended jail term. And that may be, let's pray that it is, the real issue here. Attorney General William Barr, continues the story, has launched a sweeping investigation, as you already knew, into Spygate and stunned the Democrat media complex when it was revealed that he'd appointed U.S. Attorney John Durham to probe abuses at the highest levels of the Obama regime, including their so-called intelligence and, how's this for a misnomer, law enforcement agencies. And it keeps looking like Barr's investigation is much broader than has previously been known, resulting in Obama officials from Holder to crooks like Comey, Brennan, and Clapper all going into overdrive to attack the man on Twitter and various media appearances because they know they're hopefully in really serious trouble. And no, don't hold your breath for Twitter to ban any of these slime bags either. Former Republican Congressman and Chair of the House Intelligence Committee, Trey Gowdy, dropped a bombshell when he appeared with Maria Bartiromo on Sunday Morning Futures over the weekend, describing what he called a potential game changer in the way of evidence that was, hey, say it with me, withheld by the FBI and other criminal three-letter agencies within Big Brother's intelligence and law enforcement communities. For reasons that are increasingly, and will no doubt get more so by the day from here on, undeniable. Saying he's seen the evidence himself, along with others, he called for it to be made public, and now soon it will be. And speaking to Fox News, Mr. Gowdy said there are unreleased transcripts between former Trump campaign aide George Papadopoulos and an FBI informant. He began with a recap of just some of the unanswered questions that certainly imply criminal conduct.
There are a lot of serious questions that need to be asked. When did the Russia probe begin? When did it become hopelessly commingled with the Trump campaign? What was the factual predicate? Where are the transcripts, if any exist, between the informants and the telephone calls to George Papadopoulos? Why the defensive briefing so inadequate of President Trump? Why didn't you do a follow-up defensive briefing? That doesn't even get to the whole FISA story in the fall. That's just the spring and summer of 2016. There are lots of questions, and I hope Bill Barr finds someone who is skilled enough to answer them.
He then made a couple of good points that, for the most part, the waste stream media isn't interested in asking about FBI standard procedure. That is, unless they're talking to a co-conspirator.
Yeah, I mean, if the Bureau is going to send an informant in, the informant's going to be wired. And if the Bureau is monitoring telephone calls, there's going to be a transcript of that.
Some of us, he said, actually know whether or not those transcripts exist. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
But they haven't been made public. And I think one in particular is going, it has the potential to actually persuade people. Very little on this Russia probe, I'm afraid, is going to persuade people who hate Trump or who love Trump. But there is some information in these transcripts that I think has the potential to be a game changer if it's ever made public.
He's talking, of course, about something the legal profession, back when we had one, called exculpatory evidence. Evidence that suggests the opposite of whatever it is that those who are looking for a warrant are trying to prove.
Yeah, you know, Johnny Ratcliffe is rightfully exercised over the obligations that the government has to tell the whole truth to a court when you are seeking permission to spy or do surveillance on an American. And part of that includes the responsibility of providing exculpatory information or information that tends to show the person did not do something wrong.
And by the way, the Johnny Ratcliffe he's talking about here is from the 4th Congressional District in Texas.
If you have exculpatory information and you don't share it with the court, that ain't good. I've seen it. Johnny's seen it. I'd love for your viewers to see.
On then to another email that's also been withheld from the American people's scrutiny, again for obvious reasons, from Whoremeister himself, James Comey, to his co-conspirators, concerning what you might call the crown jewel of the insurance policy.
Well, take a half step back. I mean, people use the word dossier and it has such an official sound to it. I mean, let's just call it for what it is. It's a series of rank hearsay compilations put together by an FBI source who was later defrocked, paid for by the Democrat National Committee. And oh, by the way, Christopher Steele hated Donald Trump, too. So we can call it a dossier. It sounds official. It's really something the National Enquirer would blush if they printed.
And the fact that the FBI used it and didn't blush also shows that not only do they have no shame, They have no integrity, much less fealty to their oaths before God.
So we know that it was used four times by the United States government. What we're trying to figure out is whether or not it was used a fifth time in the intelligence assessment. And you got Brennan, Clapper, and Comey, all three who know full well whether or not it was used in the intelligence assessment, but they're giving you different versions.
And this, your host interjects quickly here, is an encouraging development because we're seeing Comey and Brennan and Clapper now all beginning each to throw one another under the bus.
There is information that exists in December of 2016, and I hope anyone who has access to it, Senator Burr, Devin, whoever is open-minded, go look at that. And I think it will help you understand whether or not that unverified hearsay was used for five times.
Or just the four times we've already found out about. But wait, you probably knew it. There's more, including more cover-up. And on this score, we continue with another piece from the Gateway Pundit by Joe Hoft, who refers to some fake news from the British Telegraph, revealing, or claiming anyway, that the Brits only knew about Christopher Steele's junk Trump Russia dossier after the 2016 election, which, says Hoft, is a lie, and they put together evidence that the Brits knew a lot earlier than they are letting on. The heads, he says, of MI5, MI6, and one of Theresa May's most trusted security advisors all knew about the Trump-Russia bogus conspiracy claims long before the president-elect did. A reporter named Ben Riley Smith, evidently corroborated by the new notes from Deputy Assistant Secretary Kathleen Kavalek, released a week or so ago, show that the Brits were in on it all along, and certainly well before the 2016 election. What they didn't expect, though, was that the election rigging attempts would fail, and Hitler wouldn't win as planned. And after that shocking event, he writes, Steele approached a man named Sir Charles Farr, head of the British Joint Intelligence Committee, the body that assesses intelligence. And he'd also been a top counterterrorism advisor in May's home office. Plus, continues Riley Smith, Steele had known Farr for 20 years, so he would know what to do. They met a week after Trump's election win, and the venue was Farr's detached house on a suburban street in Wimbledon, South London. An incongruous venue, he writes, given what they were set to discuss. And here's the key conclusion from Joe Hoft at the Gateway Pundit. In April, President Trump tweeted out a stunning report from former CIA analyst Larry Johnson on OANN, who accused the United Kingdom of helping the Obama regime spy on the 2016 Trump presidential campaign. Do you remember what's called the Five Eyes intelligence community, folks? You spy for me, I'll spy for you. We'll swap the data, and everybody will have plausible deniability. And at the time, on April 24th, President Trump tweeted this. Former CIA analyst Larry Johnson accuses United Kingdom intelligence of helping Obama administration spy on the 2016 Trump presidential campaign. And then he writes, wow, it is now just a question of time before the truth comes out. And when it does, it will be a beauty. Says the Gateway Pundit, we knew this and reported on it. Over a year ago, there was solid evidence that proves a foreign government did, in fact, meddle in the 2016 U.S. election, but that government was the United Kingdom, not Russia. Meanwhile, the invasion from the South not only continues, but accelerates on the heels of stories over the last few days that things like, well, about 30% or so of the migrant families coming across the border are lying through their teeth. New DNA tests and a pilot program show that that's approximately the number that aren't actually families. Surprise, surprise. The DNA tests, of course, don't show how many of those are actually intended to be sex slaves once they make it on in. But if you have any understanding of what's called conditional probabilities, I would add one more, let's call it informed speculation, and that is that the number of people who are caught and then decide to lie about the slaves that they're bringing in, yeah, those are really my kids, is probably a lot lower than the actual total, because those that really are families are obviously a whole lot less likely to be concerned about being caught in the first place, especially now that they know they'll get a free ride. But there's more to this invasion than just lots of freebie-seeking new communist voters. And we'll continue with more after the break. We're killing our babies before they are born. Stand up and be kind and come and sound the alarm. Aren't you one of God's children, but nothing but the devil's hound? back now to the second segment for this evening. This is still your host, Mark Hall, and we started out talking about some of the really good news and, of course, really bad news associated with things that the American people just weren't supposed to know but may end up finding out anyway. And ultimately, the continuing need to punish those most responsible for letting the cat out of the bag to begin with. Whether we're talking about the alternative media now being two-faced booked and gulagged into non-existence, or WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. So while the attempted deep state coup hasn't yet succeeded, and may in fact finally be exposed to even those who get their news from the ministries of truth, the real war has only just begun. And I'll say it again, as the blockbusters of continued treason get exposed, we can probably expect various false flags and distractions at any cost to proliferate over coming days and weeks. So let's pick it up there where we left off with the continuing invasion from the south. As part of an ongoing and existing contract that the Trump administration hasn't been able to shut down, the FedGov is looking to hire a private contractor that'll be responsible for transporting, let's call it a couple hundred thousand, maybe a quarter of a million migrant children and families to shelters, not just near the border, but all across the country over the next 5 years, while they wait for their asylum claims to be processed. So call it another incentive to come on in and get it while you can, because once you do, not only will you get food, clothing, hygiene products, and all kinds of wonderful medical care paid for by the U.S. taxpayers that aren't illegals, but also commercial flights and ground transportation, too, to wherever it is that you might end up. No surprise here, the Fox story doesn't tell us how much all of this wonderful new stuff is going to cost. Not that we could trust the federal government's numbers anyway. About all we know for lead pipe sure is that it'll be a hell of a lot more than it would have cost to have not encouraged the invasion to begin with. Which brings me to story number two in the sequence, about an illegal alien from Kenya that's been charged with murder. Well, maybe that's putting it a bit mildly. So far, at least, he's charged with killing 12 elderly women, in many cases stealing their jewelry after he smothered them. And already it's clear why the waste stream doesn't want to talk about this story. As Ryan Saavedra tweeted after it should have probably broken late last week, quote, CNN has still not reported on this. And when I checked this morning, they still hadn't even been shamed into it. In spite of what you'd think might be interesting follow-up. Are you sitting down? The illegal alien from Kenya, no comment, has been charged in the deaths of, so far, 12 elderly women in Texas, says the Daily Caller. And after the 46-year-old former healthcare worker and nurse pretender, Billy Chamirmir, was charged with one count of capital murder in the death of Luthi Harris, age 81, but indicted on Tuesday for 12 additional deaths, 5 in Collin County, Texas, 6 more in Dallas County. Authorities have now told reporters of their plans to review over 750 other cases of unattended deaths of elderly women for possible links to Chamirmir, meaning he could end up being one of the most prolific serial slayers in American history. So kudos again to Natural News for asking the really important question. Do you think CNN would be quite this silent about the whole story if he turned out to have been a Trump supporter killing elderly black females instead? We'll follow that up with a note from Bob Price at Breitbart. A U.S. Border Patrol agent, Hector Garza, in his role as Vice President of the National Border Patrol Council, on a Fox interview said that, quote, we've lost control of the border, as we are right now, saying that we'd better come up with a new plan to correct the problems that led to all of this disaster in the first place. Asked by the host to explain just what he meant by that, Garza responded, quote, our Border Patrol chief has mentioned that over 50% of our agents are not securing the border, and now they're actually processing, transporting, and caring for some of the asylum seekers. But I would challenge that percentage, he added. I would put that percentage somewhere in the range of 75%. What we're seeing is that we're not securing the border, he emphasized. We're not out there catching those drug dealers, those drug smugglers, those human smugglers, unquote. He didn't say it, I will, or the embedded fifth column type future terrorists coming across along with them. All of which, though, means that they're just playing catch-up, or nanny. Citing an example from his own Laredo sector, where agents assigned to an interior checkpoint discovered a tractor trailer containing 120 migrants being smuggled from 5 different countries, quote, we're getting overrun at the border. So, yeah, we've lost control of the border. You know what? I know. Somebody ought to try to convince Mike Pompeo and John Bolton that the U.S. border matters as much as, say, Iran, Afghanistan, or Venezuela. I know, the Russians are a lot less likely to nuke us for defending that border. So even though it doesn't offer the same excitement as kicking off World War III, there's probably still other merits to consider. But not to worry, President Trump has a plan to deal with the southern border invasion, even if his neocon advisors may never let him put it in play. But the invasion from the south is really just one aspect of a far bigger problem. If we can't get a war started on the southern border, don't worry, it's coming to us. How about let's see if we can't pick a fight with, say, Russia, or maybe Iran, since Venezuela may have fizzled. Oh, and if that fails, there's always communist China, all of which are increasingly on a war footing with the United States. My guess is we'll see them all come together at about the very same time. At which point, the question about how we got here can probably be answered by the old joke about how somebody goes bankrupt. Gradually at first, and then all of a sudden. With that in mind, and since we've spent so much time over the last few days talking about war with all the other players, let's go with war on China. And not just trade war, as it turns out. There is this story, "Conditions are not right," says a headline from Zero Hedge, for a Trump-Xi meeting next month, according to a Chinese official. And all of this is in line with the latest narrative being pushed by Chinese communist media and party leadership, as opposed to the U.S. Communist Party and media, probably that's the same thing anymore, and their narrative. Beijing is in no rush to reconcile with the U.S., goes the story, as President Xi has already warned the Chinese people to prepare for a new Long March. And that was considered to be one of the few pieces of optimism holding the S&P 500 above critical support, and it may be crumbling. And maybe that's a good thing if you're pushing the official narrative, because given that the market was due for a major correction or even collapse, gotta have somebody to blame it on, and the Fed won't do. How about communist China? Here's a headline from Zero Hedge from mid-morning. Dow dumps 400 points below key technical support as bond yields and the dollar all plunge. Why, it's so gnarly today that even gold and silver in the much-manipulated Crimex or crooked casino markets are each up about 1%. And it's not just the trade war, which will undoubtedly cause a lot more effects at the local Walmarts than most Americans have been let in on so far. I'll start with one of the Chinese retaliatory weapons that's been discussed and maligned for a long, long time now. Given that they're a primary U.S. creditor and debt holder with over $1 trillion worth of the fiat stuff, and horror of horrors it goes, what if they decide to dump it? Who else would want it, other than the Fed, of course? From the South China Morning Post, courtesy of Zero Hedge, as American pundits and polls dismissed the idea that China would ever dare to dump its massive holdings of U.S. Treasury debt as retaliation against U.S. tariffs, a contrarian view is emerging in Beijing that the government may, they threaten, use the securities as a weapon of last resort. Well, says the Beijing mouthpiece, China's $1.12 trillion holdings account for just 5% of the massive total U.S. national debt, which means any material damage on the U.S. economy stemming directly from bond sales would be limited. But in addition, even if they did manage to cause market volatility, China's remaining holdings would also be hurt, which the Chinese might view as meaning the move is too risky. But the problem is Beijing has vowed to fight to the end, and with the U.S. preparing to place an additional 25% tariff on another $300 billion worth of Chinese imports, China may have, quote, no choice but to sell its U.S. Treasury holdings, according to some analysts and reports widely distributed on Chinese socialist media. Now, here's where the analysis has all kinds of feedback loops, folks, even though some of the first-order effects are pretty obvious. If China was to sell its bond holdings, that would devalue U.S. bonds, at least until the Fed could step in and print enough paper to buy them back. And since we know they would try to do that quietly, the effects might take a while before they're apparent to the typical CNN viewer, causing yields initially to rise, potentially sharply, says the piece. And if China then converted its dollar proceeds from the sale back into yuan, that would strengthen the Chinese currency against the dollar, perhaps significantly, all of which would raise the prices of Chinese imports for Americans by strengthening the yuan against the dollar and making Chinese imports not just more expensive because of the tariffs, but as a double whammy, more expensive for currency exchange reasons to boot. Yeah, folks, higher prices, probably a lot higher prices, not just at Walmart, but literally all over the place, up and down the line, because most Americans don't have a clue how many products, including products made from other products, end up with Chinese parts in them or sold directly from the communists overseas. Now, here's where the analysis goes all over the place. For one, the Chinese story here in their media says they've already laid out a plan for how Beijing could offload its treasury holdings by initially trying to avoid market attention, doing it quietly, and occasionally offloading U.S. treasuries, says their media. But once the markets became accustomed to such trades, aha, got them suckered in other words, China could rapidly ramp up the sales to create panic and a quick correction in the market. Now here, folks, your host has to interject. My guess is we've already seen a couple of small-scale beta tests on exactly that score, among many others, too. They get to do it, and then watch what the plunge protection team does in response, for example. And because of the massive size of the U.S. Treasury market, buyers and sellers have the power to cause investment changes to snowball, so as to influence market sentiment and trigger investor fear, like we're seeing today, as a matter of fact, that could spill into the broader capital markets. And that, in fact, touches as close to the real heart of the matter, according to your host anyway, as this article gets. Ultimately, if the Chinese dump a bunch of treasury holdings and make it clear that that's what they're doing, it could undermine the full faith and credit of a totally fiat system and reveal to the entire world what both us Austrian economists and Bible readers have known for a long time. Ultimately, it's nothing but monopoly money anyway, and a dollar's worth only, in terms of real stuff, what somebody's willing to trade you for it today. And that might end up rapidly being less and less, which turns out to be the triple inflation whammy of the trade war. Now, here I come, briefly at least, to the Donald's defense. He inherited an incredibly untenable and unsustainable situation, and there was no good way out to begin with. We should have stood up to the Chinese and quit gutting our U.S. industries a long time ago. The self-destructive strategy of eating our own seed corn and building the biggest debt bubble the world has ever seen has been destructive and building for decades now. We very well may be at the point at which there is simply no way out that doesn't cause one heck of a lot of pain. Which brings me to the neocon desire, continuing, of course, for war, war, and more war. They seem to think that's the solution to everything, especially economic meltdowns. And, oh, it also brings me to the second of the Chinese last resort weapons, but probably a resort before the one we've just talked about. This comes from Natural News, and it's about China's rare earth minerals and the coming export ban, which threatens to collapse the telecom industry and all kinds of so-called green power, including things like solar and wind turbines. And it goes like this. In potential retaliation against President Trump's tariffs and other trade war tactics, writes Ethan Huff, China could be on the verge of banning all rare earth mineral exports to the United States, which would immediately cripple a number of key tech industries. This is among the five nuclear options, as Zero Hedge calls it, that China currently has at its disposal to fight back, the most important of which would be this rare earths embargo, which means no more smartphones, laptop computers, solar panels, electric car batteries, or wind turbines, which use really high-powered rare earth magnets, among all kinds of other cutting-edge products. Now, we've talked about it on this show for quite a while, but as Huff points out, in case you're not aware, rare earth minerals are a necessary component in the manufacture of many high-tech products, even though most of those are in fact made by China, that people today rely on for their very survival, they put it in quotes. And since China currently supplies about 80% of those to the U.S. market, an export ban would significantly decrease the supply of those products, while of course, say it with me folks, would massively increase their cost, if not, in the process, creating unprecedented shortages. About the only good thing I could say here is it might put a kibosh in the 5G market, so people would have a little bit longer before their brains completely turn to mush. But for now, at least in the short term, the answer is, if you're planning on buying something high-tech, like going off-grid and getting solar panels and the like, or a wind turbine, or whatever the case may be, or any number of other things, look online to see what's going to be affected by the communist Chinese tariffs and the whole plethora of products using things like neodymium, lanthanum, and other rare earth minerals. Well, get them while you still can. They may get a lot more expensive real soon now. That brings me to this story, and actually all of this is leading in a single direction. This comes from Carly Casella via a site called Science Alert, and of course also Zero Hedge, which has aggregated it for our edification. The headline says, "Scientists expose world killer, booga booga booga." Where, it says, the ozone-destroying chemicals, at least if you believe that, are coming from. Well, it begins, it's been exactly 1 year since U.S. scientists reported a mysterious surge in ozone-destroying sick chemicals, known as chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs. They were banned, I would say, largely because Dow Chemical's patents expired, and, well, we have to have something else if we can't have a control of the market. But the official narrative is a bit different, and it goes like this. Banned in 1987 under the globally signed Montreal Protocol. Yeah, kind of like Paris, folks. There was only one explanation. Somewhere out there, in an unknown location, someone must have gone rogue, setting back so-called progress on the ozone hole, yeah, booga booga booga, by a decade or more. But not to worry, the New York Times has solved the problem. After much speculation, the whereabouts and magnitude of these harmful, did I say it before? Booga 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 emissions has been confirmed in scientific research. Yes, the New York Times is telling us, as they've already suggested, they seem to be coming from the northeast coast of mainland China. Now, here I pause, folks, and note, wait a minute, I can remember when they first started banning these things, and that one of the biggest imports across the Mexican border was good old-fashioned Freon for air conditioners in your car and things like refrigerator coolant and other CFCs that Big Brother America decided you peons aren't allowed to have anymore. Trouble is, all the replacements, thank you DuPont, were not as good, but were a heck of a lot more expensive. And did I mention more profitable, too? Because the generic replacements were suddenly illegal, and all kinds of places elsewhere in the world, enter the Montreal Protocol, of course, were stepping up to fill the market gap and providing continued manufacture of these things outside the DuPont and other chemical company patents for quite a while. But now, we're getting a whole different narrative. Since the Montreal Protocol was declared a success, it says, in 2013, this highly industrial region in, where? China, has continued to emit, whether accidentally or not, CFC-11, the second most abundant chlorofluorocarbon in the atmosphere. And they give us all kinds of wonderful data. But the bottom line is, here again, the evil Chinese probably deserve to be nuked back into the Stone Age so they can't keep destroying the ozone. Although, arguably, a nuclear war might end up being worse. And the violations, it says, are going unreported in all likelihood because even though CFC-11 is illegal, so far as the international PC community is concerned, it's also one of the cheapest ways, and probably the best, too, to produce new foam insulation in things like refrigerators and buildings. Pilots and others will note that Halon, also a CFC, is probably the most effective fire suppressant and firefighting thing, which is kind of important if you're stuck in an airplane at 40,000 feet and an engine catches on fire, that mankind has. But we do, of course, let political correctness all the time stand in the way of genuine life and safety where it really matters. Okay, what's the bottom line here? Yeah, one more time. This looks like another good reason to leak information out like this and say, be afraid, be very afraid of what China might do, and that's all the better a reason to prepare for the inevitable World War III again them. As we see the fervor building towards war, in other words, look for more stories like this, both more subtle and more strident. And I'll start to wrap things up tonight with a question. Do you remember the attempted mass murder in a gun-free killing zone here in Colorado not too long ago at the STEM school just south of Denver in Highlands Ranch? Well, you're not supposed to, because it doesn't fit the narrative. Oh, on so many fronts. I even remember suggesting, as did so many others, too, that the mainstream media would drop it like a hot potato for that very reason. But as it turns out, that ain't even the half of it. As Summit News reports, and Mike Adams, among others, has picked up on, Devin Erickson, age 18, Alec McKinney, age 16, actually that's a transgender one, really born a female named Maya Elizabeth, opened fire on two different classrooms at the STEM school, or Science, Technology, Engineering, Math Charter School in Highlands Ranch back on May 7, killing one and injuring eight others. And the problem is that after the shootings, news broke that Erickson had posted all kinds of nasty but don't fit the narrative messages, from being anti-Christian to anti-Trump, all the while praising, of course, their exalted mentor, Bathhouse Barry. But now, a judge, Douglas County District Judge Sick Teresa Slade, has sealed the case, put the charges along with the entire case under wraps, banning the public from seeing it, as Reuters put it. Now, let me point this out right off the top. Does that mean there couldn't be some kind of valid reason for sealing everything from the public's right to know? Not necessarily, but I'll contend it doesn't matter. Because since Big Brother and his captive media didn't want you to know anyway, now you're not going to find out, and you won't even know why. Other than, oh, how many times do we have to see it, the obvious reasons. Could it be which brands of mass murder-inducing SSRI drugs they were taking? Again, same logic. You're just simply not going to be told, and this makes it even more obvious than usual. Says J.D. Hayes at Natural News, as news of the shooting broke and spread, but oops, then also followed the aftermath, obviously the original intent was to pounce and exploit the latest gun-free killing zone massacre as yet another reason for more of the hair of the dog. But in short, a whole bunch of facts became apparent, two in particular, that were deemed harmful to the Marxist, leftist, progressive, anti-gun ideology, even beyond the usual idiocy. So it was dropped like a hot potato. Fact one, one of the shooters was transgender. Fact two, both of them were far left and hated everything to do with either Trump and or Christianity. And there's this too, as one soon-to-be shadow banned tweet, no doubt, has pointed out. Both of these students are minors, it said. One showing a picture of the latest purple-haired nutcase wannabe mass murderer here in Colorado. And the other, an innocent teenager named Nick Sandman. You may remember him because he got more than 15 minutes of fame for being a victim of media piling on. Continues the tweet under the pictures. One of these students smiled calmly at an Indian while his personal space was invaded. The other is a murderer. So guess which one was smeared by the media for an entire week, sent death threats by celebrities, and had his name released and was doxxed despite being underage. One was pilloried mercilessly and unjustly by the media day after day, and as it turns out, utterly without cause, while the other one, a wannabe mass murderer, didn't get the notoriety he so desperately seemed to want, probably because he was on the media's team, for crying out loud. And now it seems we got a Douglas County District Judge helping out and saying, hey, a media blackout just isn't enough. Something may still slip out that we don't want you peons to find out. And you know what, folks? There was a time, prior to a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't ever supposed to have slipped out, having slipped out, that I'd have suggested she might be bucking for a job at the Department of Just Us. Finally, from the Freedom Front, a bit more really good news. This comes from Max Slavo via shtfplan.com, and his headline says most of it. They're back. 3D printed guns are unstoppable and here to stay because an entirely decentralized network of self-defense gun rights advocates have taken to the internet to provide plans for 3D printed guns. And they're anonymously sharing the blueprints and advice while simultaneously building what he calls an unstoppable community. Which, of course, doesn't mean Big Brother and his minions won't try, folks. Unlike, though, previous attempts to popularize 3D printed guns, this new operation is entirely decentralized, and that's the key. There's no headquarters, no trademarks, and no real leader. Because the people behind it already understand that this means they can't readily be stopped by governments and their laws or regulations. According to Wired UK, a fellow named Ivan the Troll is the de facto spokesman of an underground wave of 3D printing gunsmiths. Ivan says he knows of at least 100 people actively working to develop 3D printed gun technology and claims there are thousands participating in the network, and that the loose-knit community literally spans the entire globe. They use a number of digital platforms, including Signal, Twitter, IRC, and Discord, critique each other's work, exchange 3D gun CAD files, offer advice, talk theory, and collaborate on future blueprints. And much, it says, to the chagrin of authoritarians and other tyrants worldwide, coming for an entire network of people, especially when you don't know who or where they are, is virtually impossible. And in all honesty, says Slavo, 3D firearms wouldn't be such a popular market if governments simply stopped trying to take rights away from people and enslave them. No, folks, Big Brother certainly isn't about to stop, but neither will good people quit fighting for freedom.